New York Sports with us. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 207. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. What are we doing on this Friday morning? Anything good? I'm here all day. I'm sleeping here. I'll be on with Sean Marash. Me and Sean in the afternoon later today. Pulling double duty again. Love it. Because once I'm working, I want to work. That's how I feel. I don't want to take off a Friday from my show. Thank you very much for offering me the afternoon drive. Happy to do it. Can't wait to do it, Sean. But I want to still do my show for my audience on a Friday morning. So I'm doing both. That's right. So I'll see you in 12 hours. What am I going to do here? I have no idea. From 5 to 2, but I'll figure it out. But I did want to talk just a little bit of football. I see you guys on the line. I'm going to get right to your calls on any subject. You want to talk football after I'm done? We'll still take your Yankee trade talks. But I do want to just get into a little bit of the Giants just for a second. I mentioned Brian Daboll. I was reading Dan Duggan, who covers the team for The Athletic. And he just made a little note, and it reinforced something that I was thinking about and how it's such a good thing. I like Mike Kafka. I think he's been a good offensive coach. Clearly the NFL respects him. He's gotten, you know, off of 2 years ago and really not much of an offensive performance from the Giants necessarily, but just being part of Dable's staff and running the offense, he's gotten a bunch of head coaching opportunities, or at least, you know, interviews. I'm sure Mike Kafka is a great head coach, a great offensive coordinator, and a good coach. But I love that Brian Daboll's calling the plays. I think that's exactly what should be happening. As I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to justify, I'm trying to get excited about a Giants offensive team. I'm trying to get excited about Daniel Jones, because despite what Brett in Long Island or anybody else thinks, I don't think Daniel Jones is bad. I think he's a starting quarterback in this league under the right circumstances. I think he's way too injury prone, and I don't think he is a difference maker. I don't think he's the type of quarterback that lifts organizations on his own. And when I had an opportunity to draft a player like that in this year's draft, that's what I wanted. And moving forward, they were willing to move on from him. Eventually they will. I just don't think he's the franchise guy moving forward. I don't think he's terrible. I think he's capable of putting together a decent offense. I think they can win games with Daniel Jones on some level. They clearly have. They won a playoff game on the road with Daniel Jones. So I don't want to make it seem like I despise him, or that I think they'll never win another game, or that he's just the worst. I think his legs are very important to him, and now I don't know about his knee. And I think when he runs like that, he gets tackled and hit, and I don't know about his neck. He's injury prone. He's missed time in every single season but one. And I just don't trust him to stay healthy. And he hasn't put up enough points, even with a poor roster, to make me feel good about him. So I'm hesitant on what he can be, but I don't think he sucks or he's terrible. He's on list as like one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. These lists come out, and he's like the 30th quarterback in the NFL. I don't believe that for a second. He's not the worst quarterback in the league. It's absurd. I think he is a starting quarterback in this league. I just don't think he's really good. I don't think he can lift the Giants, and I don't want to pay a quarterback $40 million who I don't believe can lift them. But having said that, I'm trying to get excited for this Giants season. I'm trying to get excited for this offense. And hearing from practice, you know, after a rusty first practice, which doesn't bother me at all, of Daniel Jones, what we're seeing in practice is neighbors being used in a myriad of ways, which I like. I like the idea that he's going to be the focal point of the offense. He's the number one wide receiver. He's the new weapon, unlike any Daniel Jones has had in his career. Get him the ball in any which way. I don't know if he's a Deebo Samuel type who can run, who can do a million different things, but get the ball to him early. I think with him and Robinson, who's going to be, and I'll get to this a little bit later too, how important I think Wandell Robinson is as the second option. Yeah, Hyatt's important to, you know, break the doors off the defense and get deep and create that kind of issue, and then maybe some other things open up underneath. I also think Wendell Robinson is the kind of guy you get the ball too quickly, shifty, can make people miss. If neighbors can be a combination of the two and do different things and obviously, you know, get deep behind the defense and use his height and size and strength, as well as being shifty and getting the ball to him quickly and letting him build up a head of steam. I like all of those ideas. But what I really like is Brian Daboll calling the plays. And for two reasons. And well, one specifically. The first one of the two reasons is that he's a good offensive mind. That's what he was brought here to do. Right? He was the offensive coordinator in Buffalo. He developed Josh Allen. He called plays for that offense. We've seen clips of Diggs talking about what an offensive genius he was, and he had plays in his back pocket all the time, and he would use things to throw off the defense early in the game, to set up things late in the game, that he's got a great mind for play calling, and that's one. But the main reason is, what has been the main flaw of this coach? The main flaw of this coach so far has been, and he's openly talked about it in Hard Knocks, his temper. And his inability, and what we've heard coming out of his inability on the sidelines to control himself, yelling without really providing solutions, taking the play calling away, giving it back to Kafka, taking it away, giving it back to Kafka, yelling at Kafka, getting so angry at the play that just happened. And when I mentioned Dan Duggan, what he said was, in the first couple of days of camp, you can even tell the difference. Last year, when he's not calling the play, all he has left to do after a play is run is focus on what went wrong. And while clearly you want to focus on that and clean it up, you don't want to harp on it, you don't want to yell about it, and you don't want to go over the top and not be able to control yourself and have that anger issue come out. And it felt like, and what we're hearing about what happened last year, it hampered him, it hampered the team. His inability to not get angry at what he just saw. And instead, with play calling, he doesn't have time to do that because he's focused on calling the next play. And I think him, because we've all talked about it, right? Joe Judge, one of the selling points was he's not an offensive coordinator. He's not a defensive coordinator. He's been a special teams guy like John Harbaugh. He's going to be the coach, and he's going to focus on game management and clock management, and he's not going to be in every offensive meeting. He's not going to be focused on his defense. He's going to be the head coach, which sounds great. It does. And if that's the type of coach you are, then perfect. But that's not who Daboll is. And trying to make him that because we think it's best, maybe it's not what's best. Maybe what's best is to have him be the offensive play caller. And instead of harping on things and yelling at people and creating tension inside the room, maybe just working and focusing on what the next play is with sprinkling of, opinion from Mike Kafka and his staff. Maybe that's what's best to get him to be the coach he needs to be. It utilizes his best talent, and maybe it focuses him as opposed to just screaming as his team flounders. And if there's a bad play, he's focused on the next good play as opposed to just yelling about what just happened. So I love the idea of him calling plays. Love it. Love it. That's why he's here. Do it. And we'll see how creative he can get with his new toys. And we'll see what neighbors can be, because obviously they're on Hard Knocks in front of the country saying they prefer him to Marvin Harrison Jr., which I don't think anyone would. I mean, he's the best wide receiver prospect in a long time. His father's the Hall of Famer. He's been the clear-cut number one. The Giants are telling you differently. Well, let's see. Let's use him. Let's get creative. You don't have Saquon Barkley. He's your game-breaking player. Daniel Jones has never had anything like it. Let's see. You've impacted the offensive line. Illuminor seems to not be hurt, just some bruised ribs. He should be fine. You've added Runyon. You're still waiting on Evan Neal to get off the pup list, but who knows? Andrew Thomas has turned himself into one of the best left tackles in the sport. If you can protect him, give him time, and you give him a big-time wide receiver who can be used in a bunch of different ways with the creative play calling of Brian Daboll, maybe this offense might be able to freaking score. Wouldn't that be nice? Because as much as you all might love Daniel Jones, for whatever reason you love him, for whatever tools you've seen, whatever thing you believe in, the Giants have not scored points. They've just not. And it would be really nice to see them score some points, have him throw some touchdown passes, and actually maybe put a little bit of fear into opposing defenses, which they've had none. And just, if you don't believe me on that, listen to opposing defenders talk about Daniel Jones. When he got the contract, it was openly mocked by the Eagles, by the 49ers. And now we've seen Patrick, we've seen a Hall of Fame cornerbacks talk about how he really had a real tough time going through progressions, which we've seen with our own eyes. But maybe there can be something there. And hopefully we'll see. Because you know if they don't, and it's going to have to happen quickly. Because if they do not get off to a good start, he's not going to have the opportunity to play. That's just plain and simple. His contract, they're going to look to get out of it. And if this season gets spirals quickly, they're not going to play him because they can't afford to have him injured. If he gets injured, the money's guaranteed. If he ends the season on the IL or injured reserve or whatever, the contract becomes guaranteed. And the Giants won't do it. So he's got to get out of the gate quickly, coming off a knee injury. It's a lot to ask. All right, let's get back to your phone calls. 888-808-1019. We had a little bit of breaking news. Randy Arozarena traded from the Rays to the Mariners for a deal that seems like a pretty good deal for the Mariners, but you look at it with a bit of a slanted thought process because, you know, he's just, the Rays have been so good for so long and making these shrewd moves, and this one kind of feels like, in my instant reaction, is that the Mariners got the best of it. But whatever the case, a piece is off the board, an offensive piece is off the board. The Mariners, desperately looking for offense, made a trade for their 8th and 22nd. I'll go back and double check that. But somewhere the 12th and 20th prospects got them Randy Arozarena, who's had a 900 OPS since June 1st. And the impact for the Yankees is twofold. One, deals are being made now. Get your ass up, Brian Cashman, and start making some deals. And two, the Mariners, who are one of the main chief teams competing with them for offensive prowess in this trade deadline, at least got one piece, and hopefully that limits the amount of urgency they have for the rest of the players that the Yankees are going after. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Mario in Long Beach. What's up, Mario?
What's going on? Good show as always.
Oh, thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. What's going on?
Yeah, I agree with your thing about Vlad Guerrero Jr. I think he was a four-time Gold Glover, too.
Besides
that, right?
No.
Yeah, look it up. Yeah, look it up.
Vladimir Guerrero has won multiple Gold Gloves.
Tell the guy to look it up.
I mean, his father did.
No, he did. I looked it up.
Maybe. Okay. Maybe you're right.
Yeah. He is a one-time Gold Glove winner.
He's a one-time Gold Glove winner.
Okay, so and that was last year. What year was he?
No, he won the Gold Glove in 22.
Okay,
22. Now, and let me, hold on. He won the Gold Glove in 22, and in 22, at first base, he won the first baseman. He only played 128 games there. He DH 32, played third base one. He's been pretty. He can play third base in a pinch too. Like he's a very good fit for the Yankees. He obviously is. He's a very good fit for the New York Yankees.
Listen, I wanted to tell you something. I have a very good take on Aaron Judge. I'm trying to get I'm trying to get to Evan on this because Evan, you know, with his fandom, and he was saying something that, you know, you couldn't even come close to comparing Aaron Judge to Barry Bonds. All right, so I looked it up.
Right.
The number one player in baseball history is Mark McGwire, a home run for every 10.61 at-bats.
Just
number two.
On home run per at-bat. Or at-bat per home run, excuse me. Yeah.
Well, at least 3,000 at-bats. So okay. You can't take somebody who's there for it. Number two is Aaron Judge, 11.53.
Yeah.
Number three is Ruth, 11.76. Mm-hmm. Four is Bonds, 12.92. And six is Alonzo, 13.77. You know what's interesting, too, is Barry Bonds never hit 50 homers.
Right.
And Judge hit 50 and 60. So technically, he is more a prolific home run hitter.
Well,
the thing with Bonds is he played a million years.
Well,
I mean, you can't really compare it, you know?
You mean Bonds never hit 50 home runs before hitting 73?
Right, before hitting 73, before he hit the last one.
Okay, I just want to make sure we understand.
Yeah, no, you're right.
He has the most home runs in a season in MLB history with 73.
Yeah, okay. And loaded with steroids, too, by the way.
Granted, but, I mean, it is what it is. We're comparing the players.
Yeah,
I would imagine it's under the context of walking Judge the way they walked Barry Bonds. Is that how the conversation was presented when comparing the two hitters, or just overall?
No, I think Evan was ragging him a little bit because I think after he walked a few, he took a couple of strikeouts. You know, and we said, "Oh, you got to be better than that." You got.
What made Bonds special is he would be walked four times in a game and hit the home run on the one pitch. There's no doubt. Look, I love Aaron Judge. He's the best hitter in the sport. I heard Evan's conversation. I didn't hear this element of it, but I heard Evan's conversation in the opening of the show because I agreed with him up to a point. I thought it was a lazy take and a BS excuse to just blame the lineup. I hate that stuff. The lineup is put out. That's when they lost the game, when the lineup was put together. They didn't lose the game because J.D. Davis was hitting cleanup. They didn't. Quintana was pitching around Judge no matter who was behind him, and they don't have good options. They lost for a myriad of reasons, including Judge striking out at the end of the game. But, I mean, you can't blame Judge for not in the one at bat. But, I mean, you can. He's got to come through there, but it's tough to put the loss at his feet. And I love Aaron Judge. He's the best hitter. He's not Barry Bonds circa 2000. 2001, 2002, 2003, and 2004. He's just not. Barry Bonds was better. Barry Bonds, those couple of years, that's the best hitter who ever lived. Barry Bonds in those years, and you mentioned the steroids, it's clearly an issue. It's clearly part of the story. But if we just eliminate that and say what we've ever seen, Barry Bonds for those 4 years is the greatest hitter who ever lived. And it's really hard to even argue. But your numbers are for the course of his career. He was just a great MVP player. He wasn't worldly, and he wasn't a home run monster early on in his career. So that's why his numbers are down. But, I mean, if you want to talk about Barry Bonds in those years, he would get one fastball a game and hit it for a home run. He didn't miss. He was incredible. Judge, as great as he is not Barry Bonds of those years. And I don't think he should be treated exclusively like that. But when guys who can't hit are hitting behind him, he's going to be. John in Fort Lee. What's up, John?
Yo, what up, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy?
So I was just, looking at the Yankee stats here. They have three guys hitting above 250. So I just wanted to know, like, how come there's no fingers being pointed at the hitting coach? Like, I feel like that would be something, you know,
because
no one's really been talking about.
The Yankee hitting coach? Because it's a different one than the year before and a different one than the year before. Like, they've been through all of them and we're seeing the same stuff. And, I mean, his opinion, if you've listened to the hitting coach, his take on offense and launch angle and all that stuff is far different than what we've seen prior. He's much more of a contact guy. He believes in a two-strike approach. He doesn't believe in launch angle. Like, they went to a completely different kind of hitting coach, and we're seeing some of the same stuff. We're seeing, I mean, you can point to it, sure, why not? But it's hard to make it stick. I don't know what to think about it. Also, let's be fair, he presided over an offense that for the first 2.5 months, whatever you want to think, led Major League Baseball in runs scored.
Yeah.
I mean, they still kind of do. I mean, if you look at it, they still do. So I don't know what to say. We can blame him if you want. I mean, it's just the players have got to perform better, and right now they're just not very good enough. But if you look, let's see it again. Like right now, come on, team. I click team. Let's go. Runs in Major League Baseball. The Los Angeles Dodgers have overtaken them at 516. The Yankees have 513. The Yankees have the second most runs in baseball and the most in the American League. I mean, how do you figure that? They've been terrible for 2.5 months. The same team. It's the same team. It's just minus Stanton, and yet they built up such a high run total that they still have the most in Major League Baseball. I mean, how is that possible? If you think about it, it's crazy. The Yankees have two players and Ben Rice with short sample size. The Yankees have two players with an OPS over 700. Like, up and down their lineup, they have the worst OPS at every spot. Cleanup, the worst in Major League Baseball. The worst. The Yankees have the third best OPS in all of Major League Baseball. How is this stuff like, it doesn't make sense to me. How do the Yankees, who have been this bad for this long, have the third best overall OPS in all of baseball? The Orioles have a slightly better one. The Yankees as a team have a 758 OPS. The Orioles have a 765, and the Dodgers have a 773. How is that possible? I understand Judge and Soto both have ones, but that's crazy to me. Somewhere along the lines, and this is where, you know, people want to get mad at me, people want to get mad at me. I don't give a damn. Somewhere along the lines, this team was pretty damn good. And we can hate on that idea, and we could say that it doesn't mean anything. I'm sorry, it means something to me. It means that this team can do it. This is, I said it yesterday, and I meant it. It's no longer a stretch. I'm not trying to, Aaron Boone got into a little bit of a discussion or an argument in the postgame. He didn't want to define what it was, a stretch, a slump, a time frame, or whatever. No, this is who they are now. It's been long enough. This is no longer a stretch. But that doesn't, neither was the success. That wasn't a stretch either. That was who they were. This is who they are now. They've got to get back to who they were. I don't know how they do it. And when we come back, I'll reintroduce the idea that I would. When we come back, I'll talk a little bit about what I think the Yankees should do with their lineup and a little bit of what they should do with who they should designate for assignment. We'll come back with a little bit of Yankee talk. We're still talking Mets, obviously, the story of the day. As they come back, beat the Braves in extra innings, and they now, as we spent yesterday talking about who's better, the Yankees or the Mets, and the clear answer is the Mets. Well, now who is better, the Mets or the Braves? And that's the real important question, as they're trying to get into that spot. The Braves still covet the number one wild card spot. They are a half a game behind, one game in the loss column. They just beat them last night in extra innings. Jeff McNeil continues to be impressive, and this team finds a way to win, which is so different. You watch the game, you turn on the Mets last night, they're going to find a way to win. And that feels so different than it's felt with the Mets in a long time. And so as we get ready for this trade line, Randy Arozarena has been traded. Puck, reliever for the Marlins, has been traded. Brian Cashman needs to get the hell out there and make some moves, no doubt. What are the Mets going to do? How do the Mets view this team? Because I think they're special, and I think you see special things on a nightly basis. And I want to embrace it and go get them legitimately real good top-of-the-line help at the holes they have and try to establish this team as a World Series contender, even if it costs me prospects that I never thought in a million years when the season started that I would be even remotely considering moving on from.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
They've done it against the Atlanta Braves. They've come from 7 runs down here at the bottom of the 8th inning. They lead it 11-8. Incredible. Piazza with his 22nd home run of the year. And this place is absolute bedlam here at Shea.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 2:35, McMonagle here with you. Today's a big day in the McMonagle household. Too bad I'm not going to be able to see them this morning and take them to camp, because my oldest son, Tommy, has a tennis-baseball home run derby that he's very excited, he's nervous. Apparently, if you ask him, he is the greatest tennis baseball player of all time.
And tennis baseball is one of the greatest sports ever created. Honestly, I haven't played it in so long, but
really,
it's the best. It is so fun. It's so great.
That's so weird. I didn't know it was a thing other than at my son's camp.
I just figured it was like
the kids, they don't have baseball bats because they probably don't trust them swinging baseball bats. They gave them a tennis racket and they're playing baseball with it. I was unaware that it's like an actual thing that you miss playing over the last handful of years. I was like, do you pitch with the tennis racket too?
So the way we did it, yeah, we pitched it as if it was just a regular, you know, a pitcher, but there are actually like some videos that I've seen online recently,
yeah,
where they use a tennis racket to pitch.
Yeah, I've seen the videos too a little bit. I just thought it was like, you know, tennis players goofing off. I didn't know it was like an actual thing.
It's more so actually more baseball oriented players.
Really?
Yeah.
I would figure you'd have to be someone who served on a regular basis to pitch with a tennis racket. I would feel like that would be more of a tennis thing than a baseball thing. But interesting. I've seen it. They field it. They have to throw it up. And like, even the fielders, you field it, and then you have to hit it with a tennis racket to first base.
That we didn't do. That was just, we just did regular fielding.
Yeah, I don't know, but he's got a home run derby coming up, and apparently, you know, he's the favorite, even though he plays with older kids. You know, and then he says things that I'm just not sure. Like, he'll come home and, like, he hit it over this house, and it went over there, and then it went in the hoop, and everybody was, I'm like, yeah, okay. All these crazy things happen. Dude Perfect, or whatever they call themselves, spend hours trying to hit a tennis ball through a basketball hoop. You did it twice yesterday. Okay, all right. I don't know. I don't know, Tommy. I don't know, but apparently, yeah. He's the greatest baseball player of all time. His buddy is the second best, and he's got a big home run derby today. So all the best for Tommy's home run derby at camp. He also claims he invented the game called Jackpot, which is just pretty much there's a kid who throws the football to, like, you know, a group of other kids. It's almost like a wedding bouquet where they just stand there. Someone throws the ball high up in the air, and whoever catches it out of the pile gets to be the guy who then throws it to the group of kids. He claims he invented this. I find that very hard to believe as well, Tommy. I don't think you came up and then called it Jackpot. Like, I just think, he's like, no, I invented it. I'm like, okay, you invented it. You should get it trademarked. I went to Cary High School in Franklin Square. And there was an old baseball coach who I was at odds with. I was captain of every team. I was, you know, all the coaches loved me except this one guy. Me and Coach Walpole did not get along. But he tried to invent the sport. And he called it speedball. And it was a mix of team handball, like Olympic team handball, where you try and throw it into the goal. You played with a volleyball, you would dribble it. There was like a soccer style kind of goal. It was a big goal, not as big as a soccer net, but a big goal. And it was teams like 5-on-5, and there was a line you had to throw from behind, and you could dribble and pass with the volleyball. You had to dribble the volleyball, you couldn't move without, you know, with it, like basketball example. And he called it speedball. We played these volleyballs, and the best, most fun of my life was he would have speedball tournaments at the end of the year. That was like a big thing, and the gym would be packed for it, and we had these speedball tournaments, and we had a lot of fun. In my team, we were the, in 10th grade, we made it to the finals and played a senior team, and they beat us, but we were like, for being in 10th grade, we were really good, and like, they were as packed as football games, they were as packed as basketball games, like the whole school would go to these speedball tournaments. I don't know why I thought about that, but it's true. And then what happened is he left and took the sport with him. I guess because I'm thinking about inventing sports with Tommy. That's right. He invented Jackpot. So I was thinking of how Walpole invented speedball. And he tried to make it like a legit sport. And then he kind of, I don't want to say got fired. He retired. And then they didn't let him do it. And so then he wouldn't let the school do it. And they changed it to dodgeball. And they just had dodgeball. After I graduated, I found out that they just had dodgeball tournaments, as opposed to speedball. And that's not the same. Dodgeball's just not the same.
Yeah, we had dodgeball tournaments as well. I mean, they probably weren't as packed as yours.
Yeah, no, the gym was packed. I mean, it was big. Everybody went down, and he would hang the tournament thing on the wall outside the gymnasium, all the teams and the brackets and everything, and it was a big deal. It was a big deal. And my senior year was I forget which year was the last, 11th grade? Or 10th grade. Back-to-back years, I lost in the finals to the older team. In 10th,
same.
10th grade, I got to the finals and lost to a group of seniors. 11th grade, I got to the finals and lost to a group of seniors.
That was
and then,
me in dodgeball.
And then, wasn't it the same thing? And then senior year was, my 11th grade was the last year they did it. They didn't have a dodgeball tournament. My senior year, they had nothing. And then I guess they, because he left, and then they picked up dodgeball. I don't know why I told you this story, but I did. 888-808-1019. That's right. I was an excellent speedball player as well as, you know, on the varsity baseball team since 9th grade, captain and MVP of the football team, played in the Senior Bowl. What else did I do? Varsity basketball captain. I think that's it. All county football player. Steve in Rockland. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Chris.
What's up, buddy?
Well, all the things that you're saying about the Yankees
yes.
are true, okay? So, but how about this, okay? 10-22 is 20%. That's one-fifth. That's 20% of the season.
Yes.
And that's what they are now,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Okay. So, I could tell you this right now. I could do a Rubik's Cube, solve a Rubik's Cube, easier than I can put the fix on this. And I'll tell you, I don't envy Cashman because he's going to get hammered no matter what he does.
Well,
right?
Listen, they got to – yeah, see, now I don't know about the – I mean, the Rubik's Cube thing, I guess, you know, it would be easier to fix. But, I mean, the Yankees do have the – I mean, this same team, without adding anything to it, one, you mentioned the third of the season, they were also 50-22.
I know. It's like, are they that team or are they this team?
I think
they're in the middle.
They're in the middle. No, this is what they are now. There's no doubt. Players need to get better. But again, I don't, like, there are just pieces to be added. They don't need, like, Vladimir Guerrero would be great, and I'm into it, and it gets me excited thinking about it. But they can just get Rengifo and Jonathan India and get Stanton back and hopefully have, you know, Jason Dominguez back and have Verdugo and Volpe and Torres play like either last year or earlier this season, and that solves the problem. I mean, we saw again, like it could. Like we and again, tell me who's that great. We're watching Baltimore. Baltimore can't pull away. You just said the Yankees have been terrible for how long? Baltimore blew a save again last night. Kimbrel gave up a run in the ninth again. They ended up winning in extra innings, but they need extra innings to beat Miami once in a 3-game series. The worst team in baseball. Like,
and it's like all of a sudden, all of these the Yankees and the Orioles almost at the same time hit the same wall, which is inexplicable as well.
Yeah, it's and Atlanta. It's very bizarre. It's very, very weird what's gone on here. Now, I'm not telling you everything I just said without question fixes the Yankees. But let's just say they get whatever reliever at the back end, and then they get Stanton back, Jason Dominguez back, Jonathan Birdie back, and they get Rengifo, the third baseman from the Angels, and they get Jonathan India from the Cincinnati Reds. That changes their lineup in every way. Those players change this lineup. I don't know if it'll work, but now LeMahieu never plays. Verdugo doesn't play if he doesn't hit. Torres doesn't play if he doesn't hit. Ben Rice doesn't play if he doesn't hit. Like, it changes. All those guys play instead, and they're having good seasons. And they don't need world beaters. And there's this one guy who particularly kills my thought process on the New York Yankees on Twitter. And he's just like, Jonathan Birdie, huh? Jonathan Birdie. That's where, you know, Stanton, who's always injured, and Jonathan Birdie, that's what you're hoping for. You got to be kidding me. You're embarrassing. I'm like, okay. 2 months ago, if you told the Mets, who couldn't score a run and had a miserable offense and was floundering and the season was on its way to being an absolute disaster, that Jose Iglesias would be someone who changed their freaking season around, what would you have said? If I told you Iglesias was going to hit to a point where he's got 1,000 OPS and his, you know, dopey song and his excellent play was going to take over the set, he was going to become the starting second baseman and help transform the team, what would you say? John Birdie's the 300 hitter last year. Go ask a Met fan if Birdie's a pesky hitter who can help change this team. He's not a world beater who's going to, you know, be someone who carries the team. But if he plays the way he plays, if he's a 300 hitter in the middle of this lineup or the back end of this lineup, that helps. They don't have anything close to a 300 hitter right now. Not anything close. So when I say moves like that, or I say moves like Rengifo or Jonathan India, those can transform the team with legitimate 270 to 290 hitters at the bottom of the order, as opposed to what we're seeing now. That does change things. Stanton cleanup and two legitimate 280 to 300 hitters, 7-8, that changes who they are. Now, you need Cole to get going. You need Luis Gil to continue to pitch well. You need Rodon to be, you know, better, and Stroman, no doubt. You need all that stuff, too. I'm not saying any of that definitely works, but the team would be completely different, and it has a chance to work. And this group, without those players, still had a record of 50 and 22. This is who they are now, no doubt. I'm not trying to say they're not. They're the miserable team we've been seeing for a month. It's who they are. But I refuse to believe that it's impossible to get back to somewhat being close to what they were 2 months ago. Less than that. It's not like I'm not asking for players to give me something they haven't given me in years. That's why I want to get rid of DJ LeMahieu. Now, you're asking for too much to think DJ LeMahieu is coming back. I agree. Anthony Volpe was a great player a month ago, with the longest hitting streak we've seen from a Yankee in 50 years. Verdugo was a dog in the middle of the lineup helping them win a month and a half ago. The idea that I can't expect anything, that they're just these terrible players who will never be slightly better. Okay, fine. They'll never be better. They'll never turn it on. They'll never get a big hit. Never. Right now it seems that way, but it's not illogical to say maybe you just start to turn it around, you add some pieces, the vibes change, things change, and they start playing better. But I can't say it too loud, otherwise I'm some sort of Yankee shill who's ridiculous. I'm ridiculous to think these players who got off to the best record in baseball can somehow stop being the worst. And Brian Cashman's got to go out there and make the moves. No doubt. He's got to make the moves. He's got to bring in multiple bats. Those guys got to come back and all be somewhat successful. And the pitching staff's got to get back to what it was in the first 2 months of the season. They had a streak of the longest streak of a staff in the history of baseball to all get it out of the fourth inning on every start for the first 2 months of the season. I don't need that. I just need close to that with Gerrit Cole. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Philip in Washington Heights, what's up, Phil?
Good evening, Chris. I have some trade ideas and a question.
Yes.
The Yankees, I think we agree, definitely need a bullpen arm. Now, would you go for a third baseman or Guerrero, or is it possible to get both?
Yeah, no, it's possible to get both. I think it's possible to get Guerrero and then a Rengifo or a Jonathan India. I mean, you're giving up a lot because you have to give up your best prospect. Like, they're going to want Spencer Jones without question. If you give them Spencer Jones, Ben Rice, and a top two or three pitching prospect, that might be enough. You're going to have to pay a lot to get inside the division, but that is a lot.
Well, listen, you know I like Rice, but I didn't realize Guerrero was so young. I would gladly make that trade. Because if you had Stanton and those two and Verdugo, just evens out, and Torres just evens out, all of a sudden that's not a bad lineup at all.
Well, I mean, he's an impact hit. He's an impact batter. He's far more impactful than Rengifo in India. But I think those two guys would be impactful. But yeah, I mean, you're talking about a legitimate all-star, you know, previous MVP candidate in the middle of the lineup at 25 years old. That's a game changer. That's someone, but that takes a ton. And then, I mean, if you do that and get a Jonathan India and get a back end of the bullpen reliever, you are emptying the farm system, emptying. And you got to remember, there are other teams in the market for all those players, which is going to drive the price up. So, I mean, that's a haul if you want to add Guerrero to the mix. Now, it's more likely just to do it without Guerrero. Get a Rengifo or Paredes and a Jonathan India and a back end of the reliever. That's more plausible to me, but I like to set my sights high. I would love to get Vladimir Guerrero here.
One quick question: what is the status of Bart Schmidt, because I think having him for a possible playoff, he could make a heck of a difference in that.
Yeah, he was good. He's probably about a month away.
He was pitching so great, too.
Yeah, I think you would look at it as if his spring training is starting now. I think that's kind of how they're viewing it. His spring training is starting now, so hopefully you're looking at late August.
Well, thank you very much, and good luck to your son this morning.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, big tennis baseball home run derby. Very big. He's going to be, hopefully he's not going to be, he's going to be in a good mood when I see him later tomorrow night. But, yeah, I mean, those are the guys you're looking to trade. Verling from the Detroit's another guy who's like a slightly above average major league third baseman. If that, right around average, which is better than what they've had. And that's what I said earlier. I'll say it again. For me, everybody wants blood. Everybody wants Steinbrenner to come back from the dead and fire everyone. I don't know how that works, but here's what I would say. I think the move is to make these trades, or even before they make the trades, like right now, knowing you're going to make some trades, I would DFA DJ LeMahieu. I like DJ LeMahieu. I don't have anything against DJ LeMahieu. I think, here we go, I'll give you a little bit more of the Cashman defense. I don't think Cashman gets enough credit for signing DJ LeMahieu when anyone could have. They got him on the cheap. He came in here as a utility infielder who was going to play most days and became an MVP candidate for nothing on the cheap. Love DJ. He had a great run for a couple of years. It's no longer there. He's the particular guy who sends all the right messages by DFAing him. It sends a message to us, the fan base, and for the owner to talk about, he's not a slave to the money. If he DFAs a guy who's got two more years of $15 million each for the next 2 years on his contract. These players have seen him, Judge, Torres, Cole. They've seen him be one of the better hitters in baseball. They've seen him win a batting title. They've seen him be third in the MVP. They've seen him be the machine, multi-hit per game machine, runners in scoring position machine. And it sends a message when a player of that status in the locker room gets sent away. We don't care who you are. We don't care how much money you make. And we don't care what you mean to this team personally wise. You can't play. You don't belong here. You can't hit anymore. We, unfortunately, love you. Can't keep you around. And that goes for you, Gleyber Torres. You better... I don't have to keep you. We're not going to sign you next year anyway. You don't have to play. Like, he's just good enough and has just enough cachet inside the team, inside the clubhouse, that cutting him sends a real message. And I think cutting Rizzo would be too much. I think he's too much of a leader inside that room. He's too close to Aaron Judge. I don't know if it would make sense for Rizzo. We don't even know when he's going to come back, what he's going to be. But DJ LeMahieu right now, to make a statement right now that we have had enough of this. We're going to make trades, but we don't want to wait. We're going to play Oswaldo Cabrera until we make trades. Enough of this. We don't care who you are, how many batting titles you've won, or what you've done for us in the past. This team needs to have good players who can hit, and you ain't cutting the mustard. I think DJ LeMahieu would be the perfect guy to just DFA and send that message. Because the message needs to be sent. There's no doubt. It needs to be sent. And just trading for guys and then putting them on the bench, it might help on the field because you're getting different guys in there, but you really want to send a message? You really want to make it seem like anybody's susceptible? I think DJ LeMahieu is that perfect guy. And it's unfortunate, but I had high hopes for him. That foot injury really made me very hesitant. Because we've seen how he played with foot injuries, and I don't believe him when he says he's healthy.